Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, here with Louis D'Souza, and this is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. Amy Blackford can't make it today. She wrenched her back, poor dear. I mean, she's been going through all kinds of stuff lately, so we're just going to hope that she's going to heal quickly and join us again next week. But I seem to have a rash of this lately, Louis. I mean, people who have been out for illnesses and injuries, not to mention the sabbaticals and so forth. I think I got to change my vibration
To mention Louis's mysterious disappearance last week.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was mystifying. Like, he never does that. What happened? you're allowed. That's okay. It all works out. But one thing we were going to do last week, we had to kind of put off because it was really your topic. And Barbie sent us an email about it very shortly after that last show, where she said, so excited about next Monday's episode regarding soil with Louis.
Oh, right.
Because he's such a fabulous wealth of insight and knowledge, and he even drives my car, a Jag, she says. So she likes your car, too.
My name's not Ken.
Oh, okay. All right. Mattel will be very glad to hear that, I'm sure.
I've been playing a lot of Barbie dolls with my daughter and my five-year-old.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I've got a friend called Kenneth, so we have a lot of jokes about Barbie.
That's fun. That's all right. That's good. So soil, let's talk about soil a little bit. And I'm going to have to let you carry this a bit because I wasn't really sure where you were going with it. So you got to start this off, okay?
Yeah, so if we pick up from 2 weeks ago, I was talking a lot about the body. The body is made up of soil. It's purely an accumulation of soil, and it's an important understanding for people to understand. So the way your body's made is by eating food, and food comes in two kind of sources. It kind of comes in the animal and vegetable kingdom. And the animals eat vegetables, so you could really say everything comes from the vegetable kingdom.
Okay.
Ultimately, and of course, the vegetable kingdom comes from soil. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that everybody's really clear on what I'm saying is that this body is just an accumulation of different soils. So the interesting thing is your body's really, really clever, because if you eat an apple, you don't turn into an apple, do you?
That's true.
Yeah. So there's this interpretation. I mean, you've got the vibration of an apple. You're eating the apple, but you're not turning into an apple. So you've got this incredible intelligence that goes on no matter what you eat.
Which is probably just as well. It's
probably
just as well.
Just as well, yeah.
I mean, especially where soil is concerned. Otherwise, we turn into dirt. It would be really embarrassing. Well, oh, God, he never takes a bath, you know.
That's a very important thing that I wanted to bring up is we don't use the word soil almost as much as we use the word dirt these days.
True, yes.
Dirt is a dirty word in my
I love it.
And, you know, I mean, soil needs to be respected and understood for what it is, you know, because if your soil is degraded, your soil is going to be degraded. The next generation of humans on this planet is going to be degraded. And if you want to know one of the biggest sins humanity can do for itself is having the next generation worse off than the current one.
Well, now you're just scaring me to death. I mean, that's all that is.
So let's look at soil. You know, when I've been flying in airplanes and I'm looking down and I see these endless streams of farmland, which somebody's farming something. I mean, if you're flying in a plane, that's what you see 99% of the time, and then the city comes up and you land. But, you know, most of the time when you're looking at land, you're just seeing these miles and miles and miles of cultivated land. Now,
right. Mm-hmm.
What's the problem with that, you know, that I've been seeing immediately? Because let's give you a bit of history. I was brought up on the side of a mountain in South Africa on a 75-acre plot farm away from everybody. And my nearest neighbors were monkeys and baboons.
Interesting neighborhood.
Yeah, it's really cool.
A little dangerous to go take out the mail, but you know.
A baboon perfectly.
Oh, I'm sure you could, yes.
I used to shout at them across the valley, and I can mimic them perfectly. And we had these long conversations, which I didn't understand. Maybe they did.
Well, I was just going to ask, did they understand? If they did, you know, that's half the battle right there.
So when we arrived there, and, you know, I love playing with fire, and I burned some of the grass around the house. And, you know, there's lots of stories about me and the land.
You were dangerous.
I was. Very quiet, but rather lethal.
Yes.
Wanted to become an assassin, burned down the farm. Yeah, I had a very interesting childhood in my head.
Suddenly, suddenly, I'm very glad that we do these virtually. I mean, I don't know why. But...
Yeah, I said to somebody once, I'm the most dangerous person you're ever likely to meet. They said, what do you mean, why? I said, I change people's thinking.
Yeah, that is dangerous. You ought to be ashamed of yourself on that one.
Terrible. So going back to the whole story, so when I was there, there was pretty much only grassland around us on the mountain where we lived, etc. And then slowly you get these thorn trees popping up. And then after the thorn trees came other trees. And after a while, it starts becoming like a forest, especially around the rivers and all the rest of it. And that starts spreading. And that's the natural way it happens. Mm-hmm. If there's sufficient fire breaks, which my dad was fully involved in because he was in forestry. So around the edge of the forest was this huge area, which they burnt off every second year. So, you know, it was very difficult for a fire. A fire would have a huge break before it would land up hitting the trees. So what I'm trying to point out is that the natural progression is grassland first. Then you get the thorn trees, the rough and hardy type trees. Underneath them comes the more luscious trees. And out of all that eventually comes something like the Amazon forest, eventually over a lot of time. So there's a natural progression to the whole thing. And, of course, fire is very important. When I went to the Sequoia forests in America, they told us something really, really interesting. They said they refused to allow anybody to burn in the forest because these were special trees and all the rest of it. You know, they're massive things. The Sequoias are gigantic. They had a mini in the middle of one, cut out a whole lot of it, and they put a mini in it.
Yeah. I've been there. They're spectacular, no doubt about it.
So, and then they said that they realized that there was too much foliage and all the rest of it, and for other reasons that they had to controlledly put fire through the Sequoia forests because it was essential part of the natural process of the whole thing. So, what I'm trying to point out is if you've got, we had at home, we had a Land Rover, and my sister was really into gardening and all the rest of it, and she still does that kind of work. But we used to take the Land Rover up to this part of the mountain at the back of our mountain where we got our water from, and there was this beautiful Amazon type forest around the river area. And we used to just off the side of the road, we used to dig down and take this rich compost soil just out of the ground, like huge loads of it, and just throw them back right near the road. So, you know, we didn't even have to go anywhere. That's how much and how deep it was. So we're taking out bucket loads of this incredible stuff. This is like as natural and as pure and as organic as you can get it anywhere.
No kidding,
So that was rich compost. You know, we made our own compost. We had three compost heaps, and when the first one had all the big branches, et cetera, and the second one was sifted with a big sieve, and then the next one was sifted with a smaller sieve, and et cetera. And over time, we had our own compost, et cetera. So the quality of our soil on that farm, et cetera, was really high, you know, and we got a lot of good soil put in and all the rest of it, and we made a lot of effort. You know, when you understand composting, you can take a pipe, put it down the middle of your compost heap, and with certain accelerants, etc., you can, which you don't even really need if you're doing it all properly, you will actually get like steam coming out of it. The degradation is so fast that it literally is so warm underneath. There's like steam coming out of it all the time. And if you ever study permaculture, you start understanding a lot about that. So we've got all this good soil that we're putting back. I've brought up in a very natural environment. But when you look what the farmers are doing, A, they're cutting down all the trees.
Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to maximize farmland, which I understand, exactly. But yeah.
Now, for the natural cycle of animal life to work, you need trees and bushes and shrubs and all the rest mm-hmm. of it interspersed with your fields. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these big combine harvesters wouldn't work in what would be called an organic farming environment.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, and there's a guy in America I was watching recently. He discovered this. He took compost.
He never before seen.
He put, he put it over his grassland, and he's now got incredibly fertile soil just with a little bit of compost over his huge fields. And it's amazing. And everybody's coming to look at this. And, you know, he's improved his soil rates tremendously just by putting a bit of compost on top of his soil.
It's an astonishing thing. Farmland. Yes.
It's absolutely astonishing. Yes. You know, just a little bit of compost made a huge difference to the quality and the depth and breadth of the soil and the grass and everything. So, you know, we call it Mother Earth, don't you?
I've heard that term occasionally, yes.
Yes. So, in a sense, that is our bigger mother.
Well, she certainly tends to chew us out at times.
I like that. That's very true. She spits fire at us sometimes too. And I was like,
I was watching a great special on Hawaii. Boy, the fire gets spit out over there is amazing. Yeah.
So, in a sense, you know, your mother your mother that we used to gives birth to you. That's the human physical mother, but that mother, as well as every other human on this planet, is made out of Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at it, is that layer over the earth is a little bit like the skin of your body.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And it's a protective coat.
Right.
And if you start, you know, these big open cast mines, etc., they're really ripping into, you know, imagine you've got a big wart on your skin. that's the kind of thing we're doing to our planet on all different shapes and forms. but that is, you know, that's the cover of the earth, and the quality of the soil is going down to the degree they say in India, for example, within 10 years, they're going to lose like 20% of the country's going to be arid. And in another 20 years, it's 40%. And in another 20 years, it's 60%.
So not very good when you have one of the largest populations on the planet.
Exactly.
That doesn't work too well.
Specifically as an example. Yeah. So it's incredibly important to understand that. And what they're doing now in India is they actually are planting a lot of trees. Mm-hmm. One group has planted more than 1 million trees in India for the last 10 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've discovered is, and just to go back, the farm suicide rate is incredibly high. Over 300,000 has died, I don't know, in the last year or something.
Wow.
Not sure the time frame, but, you know, from suicides.
Yeah.
Because they can't pay their bills and they've got this problem and that problem and they can't grow anything and et cetera. So they're really, really stressed. But what they found is when they put trees back on the land, now, let's bring water into the whole soil thing as well.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people say there's not enough water anymore, but it's not true. Exactly the same.
I don't know who says that, but okay.
No, there's an element of truth in it, and I'll go through all that. But the same amount of water that was on the planet many, many, many centuries ago is the same amount that's on there now.
Yeah.
It's just in the wrong places. Okay, so the reason why India, for example, is losing huge amounts, is going arid, going more and more arid, not able to grow anything, is because the lands have been farmed, the trees have been taken away. Now, the roots of the trees hold the ground together, and they they hold the water together as well, and they also create the compost and et cetera from the leaves and everything else that goes on, and all these smaller trees that grow under the bigger ones and the ferns, et cetera. So there's a whole dynamic that goes on, and all the different animals and et cetera. So the soil, the amount of trees is going, the more trees and the more growth you've got there, the more you're going to be able to retain the water in the places where you want it retained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So it's important to kind of get the idea that, you know, the planet has it wastes about 30% of its food every year because of too much food. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we got too much food, so we're throwing away food, but then there's a whole area of the planet that is starving. So you've got this whole thing that you've got too much food growing and you're getting it of a lower quality. You're getting the water in the wrong places. And everything's starting to fall apart with that whole dynamic. But the soil is so important. The soil is how your body's going to grow. The quality of it is how we as humans are going to give to our children and our children's children the legacy of what we're going to leave behind here. So there's no doomsday stuff here. You know me, I'm not particularly worried about that. I know that we can repair that and fix that very quickly and easily.
Sure.
If we put our minds to it and focus on it. So it's just the reality of the situation. Yeah. So this Mother Earth is something we really need to, in a way, look at, and specifically our soil. If there's a way and means that we can change the way we're doing things. Because the interesting thing is the people that are putting all these trees out there, they made very sure that all these farmers, and they're getting to put trees and et cetera on their lands, and they're starting to see the retention of the water over time, and they're starting to see that that's making more money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it has to be viable, and they have to. It's been shown to them that it is financially viable, and the guys that are putting more and more trees on their farmlands, etc., are seeing the results of that viability of it all. And
sure,
it was interesting. I was in. There's a guy called Michael somebody or other. I actually saw him in real life on a course. I went to Scotland or something with a course for him. He wrote some fascinating books, a lot about Pan and the Earth and et cetera. So Michael Rhodes was his name. Maybe you want to do a quick search while I'm chatting.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the title of his books, but if somebody really wants to understand this more, his books are absolutely mind-blowing. They're another level type books. It's got a series of about four or five of them.
I'm not spotting him. I see a chef. I see some others by that name, but I'm not seeing anybody specifically on food. But I'm sure he's there. Just haven't found him yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I found one, Practicing the King's Economy. Is that one of his?
No, I don't think so.
It's by A. Michael Rhodes. That's why I mention it.
Mm. No, I read these books quite a long time ago. Yeah. Never mind. So what he pointed out is he went to Tunisia, which is a little island off Australia, at the bottom there, and he lived on there, and he did organic farming. Mm-hmm. And all the other farmers eventually came around to his pad to look at the incredible way that he had gone and created all this incredible quality soil. And if you took a turd from one of the cows and you lifted it up, there were earthworms all over the place underneath the turds. None of the other farmers had ever seen this in their life before, and they were blown away.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, you had all the earthworms there, and you've got the whole earth being churned up and all the natural insects and everything doing their job, which, of course, with all these fertilizer and all the chemical companies, et cetera, a lot of that's just been absolutely killed on its head. Mm. So going back to a more organic way of looking after our soil and living with the earth is very important. Now, I don't know if you remember a few sessions ago, we talked about earthing yes. yourself in bed, etc.
Right.
So I've been going into that in more and more detail because I wanted to understand it. So the first thing you need to understand is around Mother Earth, there are negative ions. If you touch the earth, not the grass or your patio or something, but if you touch the soil, okay, mm-hmm.
right.
there are negative ions there, and there's an unlimited amount of negative ions there. It's never going to run
okay.
out.
Okay. Okay.
So you've got this huge, pretty much unlimited resource of negative ions. Now, if you stand in this for a while, they check your blood beforehand and they check your blood afterwards. They see that the blood is thinner and more viscous and more fluid and not so congealed and all the rest of it. And there's so many studies on it, reducing stress, et cetera, et cetera. So many, if you go back to the old Indians, in India, or even the Indian Indians probably did it as well, but if they wanted to heal you, they put you up to here in soil.
Mm.
Okay. In our winters, it wouldn't be advisable in the UK, but I imagine
probably in not. India, no.
It would be a different idea. So there's, I mean, you know, even if you leave them in there for a couple of hours, you know, it's incredibly beneficial to have the soothe, you know, people with ADHD and depression. I was listening to Joel and yours chat the other day.
Mm-hmm.
He had.
Yeah.
And he was saying 94 million people had depression prescriptions last year.
Yeah, something like that. It was an astonishing number.
It was like, what? And all these things can be helped hugely by getting these negative ions on you, something that's an unlimited resource of
sure.
it.
Yeah.
But you do need to be in contact with it. Now, I've got some shoes. You know, I've often run around barefoot. I've gone into the supermarkets in the UK barefoot. I've climbed mountains barefoot. I love barefoot. You know, it's just something I've done since a kid.
Sure.
I remember doing hiking and camping and buying these Dachsteiner Mindel boots and thinking they were the bee's knees. And this guy came along on all our hiking and camping trips, and he walked in flip-flops. And most of the time, he walked barefoot. And I was like, what? He said, yeah, it's fine. Don't have to worry about your ankles or anything. Your feet know where to go, know what to do. They toughen up. So I was like, okay, I like you. Yeah, I'm a minimalistic character. So I ripped them off. And ever since then, I've been wandering around mostly almost everywhere barefoot when I can. The only reason I don't a lot of the time in this country, and I've got these really, these shoes, which are called barefoot shoes. You can look them up. I've got the Segura ones. Really, really nice. Ever since I bought a pair, I've almost never not worn them in winter in this country. You can wear them on snow and ice, and they're kind of made out of I'm trying to think of the word now. You know when you go scuba diving, you wear these wetsuits, this wetsuit-type material.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's fully breathable.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And when you get water on it, of course, the water gets heated up by the body and has the same effect as you do when you go underwater. So even though I've used it in snow environments and everything, there's a very thin layer of rubber at the bottom.
Okay? Right, right.
So what I want is one of those pair of shoes with an earthing aspect, and now you can get little pleats, they copper pleats, which you can literally put into your shoe and you kind of smash them up like that. So you've got this copper piece on the ground, and then touching your foot inside as well, which is brilliant because now you've got minimalistic shoes. You can feel all the bits and pieces and your earth. So you've kind of got the best of all the worlds. So you're picking up these negative ions. You're feeling the earth. And your body is harmonizing, you know. I would be very interested to see more and more studies based on people with depression or ADHD, et cetera, who earth themselves more to see what the kind of results that will bring for them. Because I intuitively often see things that are going to develop in the future that are really going to take off. And I believe that's going to be something that is going to be more integrated. I think a lot of our shoes are going to be specifically designed so that they've got copper in them so that they conduct into your foot more. You're going to have socks that are going to be more conductive. You're going to get it's going to be more popular to even have these little sheets that are connected to your neutral in your home. In the UK, we've got three plugs and one's the earthing. So you just take a plug it into the wall, take a cable to your bed, and you've got the sheet that's got these weave patterns and all the rest of it. So I've been playing with that recently. I've been making my own contraption for my bed with copper wire and my own plugs and checking my earthing and all the rest of it, and having a lot of fun with all that.
By the way, in the US, we have the same thing. We call it a ground. Our voltage is half yours, but it's the same basic concept.
Yeah. I mean, like in Europe, they've only got two prongs for almost all their light sockets and everything else.
Oh, do they?
Have the third one. So they don't have the grounding on a lot of their things, but UK does, South Africa does, and I don't know, America, you got three plugs for everything?
Lights? Most things. In some cases, we'll take two, but usually it's three.
Yeah. I mean, everything in the UK is three. Nothing's allowed not to have three.
You know, we're not quite there yet.
it's just interesting. I just wanted to bring more and more to people's awareness the whole Mother Earth. And, of course, talking from an Abraham Hicks perspective, you're talking about something that's living without a negative vibration. So it's a fairly neutral, maybe even a bit of a positive vibration, but it doesn't carry that negativity that us great humans have with this incredible, most intelligent mind of ours. We still manage to use it more, much more as a knife rather than to hurt ourselves than something that heals and strengthens and
I would have said a blunt instrument, but I'd say a knife is just as good of an analogy. I mean, either way.
Yeah. It all depends how you use it.
Exactly.
You can use that blunt instrument as a petal or morsel or hit.
You can do that too. Yes, this is true.
It's something that I would say, you know, and I don't talk about these things often. You know me, I'm a very core guy.
I'm enjoying it. This is the first time I've seen you say anything that's on the edge of controversial. I mean, you're not actually going off the deep end with, oh, my God, the world is falling apart. But like, this is a side of Louis I haven't seen before. Like, oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's important to understand that the whole world is cyclic in nature. And if you look at it, there's one cycle is the sun rises at the same time every morning.
This is true.
So the earth rotates every day. And then you've got another cycle. You've got the moon. And every month you've got the moon.
Yep.
And then you've got the sun, which is 365 days. So we live in a world of cycles. We live in a body that's got cycles. And they say that every 40 minutes that one nostril is more open than the other one.
It seems like most days for me, but I understand.
No, there's a cycle. So it goes a little bit more this way, a little bit more that way, a little bit more this way. And it's cycling the whole time.
Okay.
And when you become very aware, you start realizing that there is truth to the whole thing. And I started to create on my phone a whole list of times when I've noticed it being more open on the left, more open on the right.
Wow, you're actually tracking it. Wow.
Yeah, I'm tracking the whole thing just because, you know, that's me. I like to understand all these things.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody says to me, you know, this thing changes, I want to see for myself, does it change? And I'm still building up more and more data on that, but it seems very, very accurate to me.
Okay.
You know, some people say 2 hours and some people have said 40 minutes, so I'm busy playing with which one is true for me.
What's the preliminary data show at this point?
The 40-minute one is more more prevalent at the moment. So the thing is, what I don't understand about most humans is if they hear somebody saying something like this, they don't jump all over it. They're not interested. You know, something like, oh, the nostrils, you know, they'll just, oh, yeah, that's interesting. And I just don't get why people are not really fascinated when they come across kind of information like that. It's just like,
be careful. You're about three steps away from going on to a political activist campaign. I'm just giving you a little heads up here.
Yeah, I mean, a political activist in the sense of understanding yourself, you know, versus being wondering.
That's a much better kind than what it usually is. That's a much better one. Yeah, I would say.
But, you know, Mother Earth has created this physical body, which is the pinnacle on planet Earth. It is the most sophisticated piece of machinery there is. It made every other piece of machinery on the planet.
Mm.
And it is the most sophisticated piece of machinery out there. And most of us haven't read the manual.
Most of us didn't know there was a manual. Let's be perfectly blunt.
When I hear something like, oh, one nostril's more open than the other, that's a manual. You see what I'm saying? It's like, oh my God, let's study this. Let's look at this. It's so exciting.
Well, I feel the same way about law of attraction and energy and source
absolutely.
Energy. And all. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, but
law
that doesn't mean that everybody else
exactly
will. Yeah.
No, I know that. I know that. But, you know, coming to this earth and this planet and this life and, you know, buying a game of Monopoly and not having any rules to it and just blindly stealing other people's properties and riding over that and landing in jail and not jail and you don't know why. You know, it's, you know,
I'm
find out
analogy.
Why you're here, guys. You must understand something about what the hell you're doing here, you know?
Well, I will say one thing in Monopoly's favor, at least in the rules they provide, they tell you what the object of the game is. I will give them that.
I'm just saying, what happens if they didn't?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's what people's lives are like. They're mm-hmm. running this piece of machinery where they don't realize they've got all these psychological dramas that are harming them, which are in their control, completely in their control. If they understood the mechanism, the design, the dynamic, the law of attraction, then they would not hurt themselves. They wouldn't cut themselves to pieces.
But this is an interesting core question that I've raised in numerous situations, different topics and so forth here on the show, which is, why do we come here to this planet knowing perfectly well in this life that we're arriving here without that user's manual? We do it with apparent intention. And I've actually gotten some pretty interesting answers out of that one, but I think it applies here once again. Why do we do it?
Well, this is a very good point, and it's a very good understanding of why we choose to play the game like this.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've had all these lifetimes in theory, some people say. Okay, I mean, doesn't matter if you believe it or don't believe it. You've had all these lifetimes, so you've got all that knowledge of all those lifetimes, but you choose to come into this lifetime with a clean slate. And you know, when my second daughter was born, I looked at her and the thing that was absolutely ringing through me with absolute clarity is this is a clean slate. This is an absolute clean slate. She's coming here as a clean slate. And I was like, wow, okay. Okay, so why would you want to come as a clean slate and not know the rules of the game of life and all the rest of it? And then you remember I went on the stream and I asked them that question?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which was answered before I'd even asked it.
That's always annoying, but I know exactly what you mean.
So he said, well, what did he say? You choose to come here so you can play more with the contrast, I think. So something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know the whole dynamic before you get here, you're not going to make all these stupid mistakes and play
yes.
Get all involved with all these politics and the this and that, you know, where I am now, where I'm not interested in any of that stuff. So you're not going to actually play this game. So you're not going to play with the contrast as much. So you're coming here with no manual. You know, I understand that. So, and I appreciate that. I agreed to it myself. When I came in, I was a pretty empty slate and I didn't really understand everything. But as you grow older and you get some sense and you're able to make some logical deductions and use your mind, you know, you can start finding out a lot of answers.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are not interested, you know. So it's not that it's wrong, because they're following their dream, their focus, their goals, and they're going off in their direction. That's fine.
Right.
But I still think that they'd be so much more empowered if they had the rules of the game so that they could go out in the direction they wanted to with some stability and coreness. You know, if you're building a house with a rocky foundation, it's going to go off the rails, you know. You know, you go out and you want to get money and get rich, and you get your big car and your big house, and then you have divorces and you're taking drugs and, you know, the world's falling apart. because you've gone off half-cocked. You've gone off without a solid foundation. What are you doing here? Where are you going? How does everything work? So, you know, it's understandable. So I'm always trying to encourage people to just really get a greater understanding of how everything works so that they can have this really solid foundation and be incredibly confident inside, really confident, so that they can go out there and just live life and you know, the level and depth and breadth to which they will be able to take their talents would be on a such higher level, it would be gargantuous. And, you know, that's what I'm really encouraging a lot of people to do, is to really get that core understanding of all of that so that they can have this real confidence and they don't ask all those questions like in that law of attraction group. One lady said, "What is your biggest challenge with relationships?" So I said to her, "The biggest relationship problem you have is between you and you. And once you sort that out and you get that really sorted well and you understand that to a great degree, all the guys are going to come running."
That's
she
true.
She says to me at the bottom there, "You know, I really needed to hear this."
Well, good.
And, you know, that's the kind of message I'm wanting to get across to people, is understand that there is – you were non-physical before you came into this physical. And the physical is the contrasting vibrational interpreting machine. But you're not only that. You're the non-physical part as well as the physical. And the two are together all the time. Can't separate them. You're there. And that non-physical side is much bigger side. It's been through many lifetimes and knows everything. And it guides you through your emotions, as we've learned with Abraham Hicks. And you've got this gap between you and you. So any relationship, there is no relationship between me and anybody else. If I think there's a relationship with you, Walt, it's an image in my head, isn't it? You are just an image in my head. You're an idea.
But I'm real, I am.
You think you're real. I'm just an image in your head. So everything happens only inside you. And it is a relationship between you and you. And once you get it, you get what Abraham Hicks is always saying. You know, get yourself aligned. Get yourself in synchronization. And then, because you're vibrating that beautiful, correct, balanced vibration, what you want is going to come to you out of the vortex of everything that you've wanted. It's going to magnetically attract it to you. That's what the law of attraction is about. So, you know, understanding the mechanisms of where the planet fits in, where you fit in with the planet, how that planet can help you, how you can help the planet. There's this symbiotic relationships that are going on all the time. And, you know, Mother Earth has a non-physical aspect to it.
Sure. Well, I mean, so, I look at it this way. Everything, including the Earth, is made up of source energy. It's all spiritual energy or source energy or whatever you want to call it. But it's the energy that makes everything. As long as that's going to be the case, then there is always going to be a non-physical aspect to everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, you're not taught that. We're not – the world, almost the entire world has been taught, the Asians less so, but the world's been taught that the intellect and the mind is king.
Which is true, by the way.
It's not.
But it is.
Your intellect only knows a tiny, tiny little bit. Your genes and your cells in here, you've got your great-great-great-grandmother's nose on you. Did you know that?
I wouldn't be surprised.
You wouldn't know that, but the cells, the genetics in your body know that. It has an incredible wealth of knowledge and information there. that is so much more than the stupid little intellect that you've got. So, you know, I'm poo-pooing the intellect and the mind a lot recently, and I'm really getting its place in the whole scheme of things. And when you do that, you really get to the point of being able to say, I see Walt, and I'm enjoying the conversation. I see this guy's being rude to me. I see that guy, they're being nice to me. I see this cup, this glass in front of me, and it's got water. But you see what I'm not doing?
I've never been very good at canceling negatives, so you'll have to help me with that one.
I'm not judging any of it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. So it's the judgments that you put on it that is harming everybody on the planet. Okay. You're good, Walt. You're bad, Joe. You're kind, Ken. You're ugly. You know, once you start putting all these labels on everything,
we're good at that.
The knife starts cutting into you and everything starts going to pot. So when you're able to look at life from the point of view that there is no judgment and you're still very clear about what you want and you go for it, but it's just, you know, it works, it doesn't work, it worked, could, didn't work, good. You know, there's no real judgment anymore. There's no good or bad anymore. It just is what it is. And that's what they've termed spiritual detachment, but I don't like that term, and we can go into that in another call together. that's probably a whole another discussion. So, yeah, that gap between you and you, when you find that gap, when you find that access to your vortex and your source energy, things start really changing for you in such a big way. And the whole of you needs to be kind of imbalanced. There is a balance between many different aspects of yourself, a balance of emotions, a balance of mental, a balance of the physical, a balance of the food, the diet. Once a whole lot of aspects in you are balanced, then out of that comes a place where you can experience and initiate your full potential.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's surprising when you get these people in balance. Suddenly they're doing things they'd never dreamt in their entire life that they could do. It just boils out of them. It's like breaking through a whole lot of barriers. And sure. It's all about getting these bits of the puzzle of who you are into balance and then connecting to source and then having the downloads and the flow of all the ideas and things that you can do. And it's just something I wanted to make people more aware of. I want people to be a little more clear about the design and how it all works, and where people generally are and where they can go to and how they can move there. You know, I've mentioned to you things like try to catch yourself before you go to sleep and all the rest of it. All these little things are keys. And you'll notice I'll give lots and lots of different ones, like walking barefoot, etc., because everybody's going to come from a different angle and they're going to like some other different aspect of it, and they need to choose their own way into finding what they want to find and where they want to go.
Sure.
So, you know, you give people a lot of different ways of doing it. And
I love the descriptions you've been giving. I mean, you've been giving a really beautiful, well-rounded description, very detailed, very lush. I mean, to use the term that we were talking about earlier, you were talking about the lushness of composite soil and so forth. And the description you've been giving is equally lush. I like that. I like that a lot. I was giving you a hard time on a couple of things there, but I totally get where you're going with it. And the only thing I wanted to throw in, it was kind of why I was giving you a little bit of a hard time about, yes, I am King. No, you're not. Yes, I am. Is because, well, I totally get the way you were explaining it. I think of it a little bit differently. And the way you were explaining it is very much the way, many teachers explain it, the way most of my co-hosts just explain it, very much the same way. I think of it a little bit differently. I think of it as I am not just my conscious mind, because my conscious mind just fits into this little tiny head and has access to these neurons and basically interacts with the world that way. But I think of myself as being much larger than that, as being, it's kind of like a, you know, a size 10 outfit stuffed into a size 2 body or something, you know, just like really, really, really condensed down. And it makes for an interesting life because it means that at any given time, we are dealing with insufficient information, I guess, from a conscious perspective, from a directly aware perspective. I mean, what do we figure based on the numbers that Joel gave on Wednesday? And they were different from the numbers that I've heard, but the ratios are very much the same. We are able to process consciously about 1% of the data that comes in through our 5 senses. Well, that means 99% of it we're missing, you know, so it gives us a really clear idea of, wow, you know, we're working with very, very limited information that we can handle through this conscious aware mind in our brains.
Not necessarily, but that's another discussion.
Well, no, I think it is part of the same discussion. Let's go with it for a bit, because what I was going to say is the balance that you're talking about, that's what Abraham calls alignment, really. Mm-hmm. And that alignment is, and this is where I like the Abraham explanation very well. It's the alignment between that conscious piece of my mind, that narrow band piece of me, and the rest of me. They refer it as the rest of the non-physical. Well, they usually don't say non-physical specifically, do they? I can't remember. It doesn't matter. The point is that they refer to that rest of it. And they talk about how there's like a sort of a disconnect that goes on there. We're able to pinch ourselves off, I think they say, which I think is a good way of describing it.
Yeah, I agree.
So when I think of it, I don't think about it in terms of getting back into balance. I think of it simply in terms of becoming aware of a connection that's already there. That's the part I was trying to get to.
Cool.
I don't think that could
I like it. It's more accurate and clearer way of describing it. And I'm completely with you. There is no door to open.
Yeah, it's already
there's
open.
There's no closed door. You just realize, oh, it's open.
It's
open.
You mean that thing I've noticed all my life and discounted was actually something? Oh, wow. Yeah. That's the way it seems to me.
Yeah, no. I will add it to any future discussions I have. Because I have actually mentioned exactly the same thing. It's just in the context I was coming from, I didn't look at it from that point of view in this time. But I completely agree. The whole hypnosis thing that the Abram was dealing with the person the last time I looked up hypnosis was all about that aspect, you know. You know, oh, we're trying to remove their blockages. But Abram says, there is no blockage. There is no door. There is no lock. It's always open. Oh, but you know, I got the guy completely in a bit of a twist there, coming to really realize that, oh, yeah, you know, you don't have to go through all the crap to get to the good stuff. You just have to start working with the good stuff because it's always there. There's no door closing off to source energy.
And it's a bit of a skill in that we do come to this world, to this life, as that tabula rasa, that blank slate you were talking about. And as a result of coming into the world with that state, that's a good way of describing why it is we have to reconnect to it, why we have to become aware of it again. And it's a process. If you have pinched yourself off from it long enough, it takes a little while to kind of feel your way there. That's what I've been finding. I mean, I'm getting better and better at it, but it's almost like learning to walk again after you've been injured or something like that. You're just trying to make all of those connections that are already there function again. You're kind of like, it's like a computer reboot, you know, one process at a time is coming back up, one process is at a time. And that's what a large portion of life seems to be about for those of us who follow the regimen. It's not really a regimen. The process of rediscovering, of reconnecting, of re-noticing that connection that's always been there. And it's fun, but it's also a challenge. It's like anything else. You're learning it. You're taking time to learn it.
You brought up a concept there, which I wanted to play with a little bit. And the concept is, I think you would use the word process or... You know, you were struggling with it. The concept I'm really kind of getting with at the moment is this. A car, if you wanted to drive it, you need to know a few things about how it works. Brake, indicator, gas, the Americans call it. acceleration.
Well, we can go with petrol. That's all right.
We call it petrol. you need to know a few things about it. And that's it. If you want to drive the car, you need to know a few things about it. And it's not a religion. It's not a philosophy. Mm. It's just a mechanism. You need to know how to use the mechanism. You need to know
how to use the mechanics.
Yeah. You just need to know how to do it.
Yep.
And that's the way I look at it. It's not a philosophy. It's not anything. It's just, this is the mechanics of life. And mm-hmm. if you understand how they work, you can just drive a little bit better to your destination.
Mm, yeah.
It just works better. And it's cleaner and it's clearer and it's more exciting. And I've been playing a lot with breathing again recently to a significant level. So just talking about the 4-7-8, which I've brought up before in other shows. So you're right. Breathing for 4, hold for 7, breathe out for 8.
Mm-hmm.
Open mouth, tongue at the top, making a bit of a sound. You can look at 4-7-8s all over the place. It's an old Tibetan thing, which probably came from India. Southern India originally, because Tibetan Buddhism comes originally from India, by the way. So there is a sweetness and a beauty and a clarity and a connection with taking a breath. And it is really on a... A samadhi is a word I wanted to use, an Indian word, a connection with source type of feeling, a blissful aspect to it. There's a mm-hmm. real blissful aspect to sure. breathing. And the 4-7-8 is a really nice, easy way for like a lot of the population to just get into breathing. There's some great YouTube videos on it. There's an animated one, and there's one by Dr. Weiss. All of them explain it in some great detail, etc. But it's a cycle. Breathing's a cycle, isn't it? It's in...
Continuous.
And there are statements, and I will get them clarified for you for maybe next week if we want to discuss it. If you slow your breath down to 6 breaths a minute, you connect with the earth. And if you break it down to so many, I think it's something like 3 breaths a minute from half of 6, you now connect to source. And there's another one in the middle, and I can't quite remember it. But this is something which somebody said to me, which is like, what? I want to find this out. Is this really true? Because, you know, if somebody says something like that to me, then I want to play with it, and I will – play with it mm-hmm, and I'll mm-hmm. practice it, and I want to see if there's some connection, because I'd love to be able to connect to the earth more. I'd love to be able to connect to animals more. I'd love to be able to connect to source more. And if you're breathing at different rates per minute, can actually be a benefit, which I've never thought of, and I've read a lot of books on breathing and I've never heard this information before. This is something that jumps out at me. It's like, I'm going to look at this, you know, I'm going to play with it. And I'll come back to you and I'll tell you what I'm experiencing. But, you know, it's that kind of information when somebody says it to me that really sparks my interest. And it depends who says it and why they say it and the context and all the rest of it. I take a lot of factors into consideration. But, you know, information like that can be hugely beneficial and very easy. And it's accessible to all.
Sure.
And, you know, if you want to play with it, you can start finding out more and more about it. So,
well, that's the beauty of all this stuff. I mean, the thing that, like, when you talk about the 4-7-8, to me, I kind of feel about that the way you feel about the alternatives to Abraham Hicks. It's like, it's, you know, far too difficult, far too much work. I just want to go with, you know, if it feels good, I go with what feels good and just go with that. And for me, the same thing
but
is true
for
breathing.
But I tell you what, it feels good.
I'm sure it does. For me, I mean, I just have gotten into two things. One thing, I've spent a lot of time lately just enjoying taking breath in. And then I've also been spending a lot of time enjoying pushing breath out. and I don't really care what the pace is. I don't really care whether it's, I don't have my stopwatch out. I'm not counting seconds.
You know how happy I am that you are finding your own way and not doing the 4-7-8. It makes me so excited. Please don't listen to anything I say. Do it your own way. Please, don't listen to me.
I love it. Oh, that's funny. It's like a great
because
roller
coaster.
Because
that's the way it works. Because when you feel comfortable with it, when you're enjoying the way you're doing it, you're getting your experience. And it's not that much different to my 4-7-8.
Not really.
But you're starting to get that idea that the cyclic things that are happening with you and you become more aware of them. You know, what are those mad people often doing in their chairs? They're rocking, aren't they?
Hmm.
That's a cycle.
No, well, yeah.
A cycle which is very calming.
That's exactly why they do it.
Very soothing.
Right.
And, you know, I do it in my bed. I've found different ways of rocking.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you watch snakes. They, you know, you watch many, many different creatures that have their form of rocking.
Yeah, and, sure.
You know, one of my past lives, I was a snake charmer sitting with my bum in the sand.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah, I haven't had any musical talent in this lifetime. I don't know what I did, but I think I played some little thing and the snake came up and, you know, I really was engrossed in that whole experience to a very high level. And it really,
well, knowing really you, I kind of suspect that what was really happening is you were having a conversation with a snake saying, okay, let's do a little speaker's corner here. So
then speak to the corner.
That's right.
Oh, dear.
Oh, so, it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, let me take a moment in the middle of this cycle to just remind people to use the LOA Today app to send in questions and comments, like Barbie did today, because she reminded us of a great topic that you ran with for like 45 minutes, almost untouched. It was just amazing. But take advantage of it. Yes, there is an update that's going to be coming out. I've been promising it to come out sometime in the next couple months, which means probably by the end of March. Although I'm hoping to get it out before then, because I'm going to take the book that many of us worked on about 2 years ago and publish called Real Success Stories of the Law of Attraction and basically manifestation stories. And I'm incorporating them into the app. So that's going to be coming up pretty soon. But in the meantime, just and when we make that change, there will also be another page in there. I've already created, just isn't in everybody's app yet. That will enable people to just send a statement, you know, a comment or something along that line rather than using the question form, just so that, you know, we don't have that kind of confusion. We don't want to confuse people. But for the moment, just use the ask a question form and just send stuff in and you know, basically stimulate the conversation, because look what you get. I mean, look what Louis went with today. He took the word soul and boom, he was gone. You know, it makes really interesting conversation. So I guess I'm trying to encourage everybody, keep using the app more and send in your stuff and become part of the conversation.
People communicate.
Yeah, it's fabulous stuff. I also wanted to just throw in one final kind of thought to tie together what we've been talking about here, what you've been talking about. I've been kind of going, But the thought that I wanted to bring into it is, this may even become a topic for next week, but it's odd because we come into this world with this blank slate, and yet many of us, we get here and we're not satisfied with that. We realize we're not working with the rules of the game. So we cheat. We connect with Abraham. And Abraham tells us, well, here's what the rules of the game were that you weren't given. Like, well, that defeats the whole purpose. We came into this world not to have the rules, except that it doesn't. I mean, I'm being kind of facetious about the whole thing. But I think it's just kind of an odd, interesting point that we come into the world deliberately saying, yes, I'll come into this world and I will be blind to all of my past history. And then I try to learn all my past history. Like, okay, what was the point? I think I know what the point is.
There was a point there I wanted to clarify. You come into this world maybe as a blank slate, but you're aligned like nothing.
No, well, that's true. Yeah.
And then when you accumulate, this is the way Abram puts it, when you accumulate more thoughts of what you don't want, which have a manner, than what you do want, so what you wanted and you haven't managed to manifest, then you cut yourself off from source because of that.
And you feel it.
And you feel the pinch. So
mm-hmm.
you actually come in fully aligned.
You do.
And slowly over time, with your parents and your religion and all the other things, you start pinching yourself off. Unless you've got a great parent like myself who allows you to find your own alignment, do your own thing, and I'll just put a roof over your head.
We'll have to have your daughter back on sometime so we can have her side of that story, but that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I've given her so much so much leeway that she's hung herself a few times already. And we won't be talking about those on the podcast.
No, she'll probably come up with the ones where she kind of hangs you out to dry, and that'll be fun.
Yeah,
too,
yeah, but, yeah, I'm sure.
But this has been great. Thank you for taking this time to really give us a really in-depth exploration of soil. I don't think I'd ever considered that before, but that was good stuff. It makes me appreciate the fact that Louise and I run a gardening business where we do everything with organics. And, we probably have some of the healthiest gardeners on the planet working for us just because of that. So that's good stuff.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Hats off to you guys.
So thank you very much. Thank you also to our podcast listeners and for, paying attention and sharing those wonderful emails. And, we just look forward to them every time. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. Bye.